I'm not going to go down that road.
Well, Jason explained it.
But when they said Albany wanted to do it, I was just, choose your words better.
Yeah.
And
can I call the Appropriations Committee back to order? And next on our agenda is, wait, did I leave off at the next item? Are we done? Yeah, I guess we are at the next item. ONCA 2314, an act to amend 15 ONC subsection 2319A to allow the treasurer or their designee contracting authority for payments under $250,000, and 15 ONC subsection 2319B to allow the treasurer to obligate funds for payment under $250,000, and to establish an alternate effective date. Congressman Big Horse is the sponsor, and you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have been discussing all morning, the cost of things and the price of everything going up, that's what this is related to, is raising that threshold, I think, by $100,000 to allow the treasurer to spend up to $250,000 without the chief's signature. Anything over $250,000 has to have the chief's signature. And also, I was a proponent of this because there's not anything that's going to go through here that we're not going to see. So I'm going to turn this over to the treasurer if you have any comments, sir.
Mr. McIntosh.
And looking back, and I think in general we've been talking about looking at revising, updating some information. Looking back, I believe this $150,000 threshold and amount's been on the books since 2012 to 2006. I can't research back beyond 2014 online. So I think just in a matter of, that's 10 years if it was amended to 150 in 2012. If it was 2006 when this threshold was established, then I think it's just in keeping up with the times, you know, we're 10 to 15 years beyond that point. Mm-hmm. So the normal inflation, dollar, time value, that's kind of supporting this recommendation too.
Mm-hmm. Anyone have any questions or comments they'd like to make? I guess for me too, looking at, it also shows the growth of the nation and where we've gone from then to now. I mean, there's some of us that remember when we just had a few $100,000, that was it. So with this success of the nation also comes these higher amounts of money. Congresswoman Lemon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. May I address Mr. McIntosh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Treasurer McIntosh, so have you ran into where you haven't been able to meet some obligations as of now? Already, have you ran into anything of that nature? And I'm not saying that I'm against this. I'm just curious because we hear things out there in the great wide world.
Well, I'm not privy to what you hear, but my understanding is that we currently have our thresholds outlined, and that's how we operate. Managers and directors basically have authority up to $10,000. Secretaries pretty well have the authority from there up to 150, and then it would go to chief on signature authority. As far as what gets paid out, I'm built in at a 50. I made sure I was built in at a $50,000 amount to review every payment or every purchase that's going to be over $50,000, just from a financial management standpoint. That I feel that I should be aware of purchases, contracts, anything of $50,000 or more. That was not written in anywhere. It's just what we built into our process. But to my knowledge, no, we are still operating within these thresholds. So unless you provide that information that you've heard, I could validate or not validate it. So
it was a phone call, so thank you. And sometimes I knew we were going to be having this discussion. based on other discussions that have gone on here and with other colleagues. And so that's why I asked the question, because I don't want to light a fire where there doesn't need to be one lit.
Right. And there's a...
Thank you.
Chair. Congresswoman Reeve Arden.
Yes, thank you. I'm not opposed to your recommendation. You know, this is in your area, and sounds like you've identified a barrier, something that's slowing down the process, I would assume. Is that so? Right now, you're saying anything above that then would go to CAHICA for approval to obligate those funds or obligate the payments.
Yes.
And so, kind of back to what Congresswoman Lemon is saying, you want to give some examples of something that you may see that comes across, that is there a lot then going over to CAHICA that he has to execute rather than you? And is it a timing issue or what took place that caused you to address it?
It helped facilitate. I mean, just in the normal operation, we have close to 20 bank accounts. You know, we have payroll funds. We're transferring monies, you know, in accordance with how we're supposed to. And sometimes we run into limitation on wire amounts, you know, being able to approve those transactions to move those funds out to outside agencies, external appropriations of that nature. Now, moving funds internal between our accounts is a different level of authority.
Right. Chair, if I may continue.
Yes.
Okay, so, and that's a little bit different than your authority or responsibility to draw down funds.
Yes, I mean, draw down funds would essentially, as we expend money, we draw down funds.
So, my point is, you have the authority to draw down way over the amount of $250,000, but yet you don't have the authority to obligate or expend it.
That would be a correct statement.
Okay. I'm just trying to get, you know, I just thought this makes sense that you would request that. So I don't have any problem. I was just trying to make a point that. Thank you, Chair.
Anyone else have any questions or comments?
Chair.
Congresswoman Shaw.
Thank you, Chair. I don't really have a question, but this, it makes sense to me that we would increase. It's not a huge increase. So we're talking from 150 to 250. Monies that have already been appropriated by Congress, already been approved in the budget. So there isn't anything, because I'm thinking, you know, thinking about some of the questions that we as Congress people may receive from some constituents. So this is money that's already been appropriated. This extends your authority by $100,000. I don't have a problem with it at all, because it's already been approved by Congress, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. It's kind of like you approve some of these ARPA projects. They're in the millions of dollars. Well, there's a contract for the architect. There's a contract for, you know, the construction company. But let's say the contract for the architect is at 225. If this is passed, well, that's something I can facilitate and keep moving forward. But then when you get to the contractor and he's whatever project we're talking about, $8 million, that's going to go on up and get signature.
Madam Chair.
Speaker.
I'm in agreement. I was a little... I think a little surprised to hear that the secretaries have the same authority that the, I won't say treasurer, but acting treasurer has. And so that just based off of that alone, right, I am okay with moving it up, as you should have a little bit more authority when it comes to approval for those dollar already appropriated dollars and cents. I will reiterate that. So I'm in support of this.
Anyone else? Congresswoman Lemon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so to reference what I had, my opening question was, and basically follow behind Congresswoman Reeve Arden, you know, the word barrier, you know, is something that sometimes we handcuff, or other people call it handcuffing ourselves. And if this helps in any way to improve the process in your department, for our government, for any other whatever it needs to be, we definitely need to be in support of change. And it's just a natural change that happens over time. And you have another safeguard in place with the secretaries that you still have to, even though they have the authority, you still, at the 150, you still have to look at the anything over 50,000. That's something, a safeguard you've put in place. And so that's even, that even gives me more comfort in what we're doing here. And I don't think anybody in this particular branch would want to hinder and slow us down. And Lord knows we've got a lot going on. And so I'm going to make a motion to report ONCA 23-14 to Congress with a due pass recommendation.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Any opposed, say no.
Chair, I have a question.
Yes.
Just real quick, do you think we'll be meeting this afternoon? Will we be meeting this afternoon?
Yes.
I just had a constituent ask, and I said I wasn't sure that I'd ask the chair. I don't mean to interrupt, but kind of. Yes. Okay. Yes. Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. ONCA 2314 has passed to report to Congress. Next is ONCA 2315, an act to amend 15 ONC subsection 2311G to move the date of the executive summary report of the annual audit financial reports of the Osage Nation from March 1st to July 15th and to establish an alternate effective date. Congressman Big Horse, you are the sponsor, and you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This one here took me a minute to kind of look at, and I talked to the treasurer, and the only thing that would not be reflected in this report by making this move would be the retained revenue. And if we're receiving retained revenue from the past year, to me, we would want to sit on that just a little bit. I mean, we don't want to go rush out and just spend it right away, I wouldn't think, but that was my thought behind sponsoring this. So, Mr. Treasurer.
Yeah, this is another just kind of housekeeping. Of course, we're pretty aware of what the deadlines were with the previous audits, 2021. You know, the government audit, single audit for receiving federal funds is you have to turn that in, I think it's June 23rd, but essentially by June 30th of the following year. Typically, that's your common timeline. Our timeline to complete the audit this year that we've laid out, our goal is to have the governmental programs audit done before Memorial Day and hopefully issued, which would be 1 month sooner than last year. And our overall goal is to have the complete tribe-wide audit done by June 30th. And that would then kind of, by setting this date, it kind of aligns with what the federal government gives you. The federal government gives you until June 30th to submit your government audit, because they allow the first 90 days, you're allowed to kind of close out and liquidate from your 930 balances to 1231 on your federal side. So your government audit's going to go hand in hand with those federal audits. And that's typically, if you're looking to bring a CPA in, and they see this deadline, you're going to find resistance, because they know that that's almost an unachievable date to say that we end September 30th and then you have to provide an audit report by March 1st to Congress. It doesn't even coincide with the federal audit timeline, if I'm interpreting this correctly.
Congresswoman Rivard?
Yes, thank you. Okay, so for those listening and those that may not, let's go back a little bit for clarification. We have the nation two types of audits. You have a single audit, which is due when?
The single audit's June due to the federal government, I think June 23rd, that last week of June.
Okay, so in June, and then the government-wide audit is due when?
So the government-wide, to me, this would define that the government-wide needs to be completed by June 30th also, is what I... There's nothing really saying when the government-wide would be completed other than before March 1st. So we got September 30th. There's 3 months to the end of December. Then you've got 2 months. So you're saying that you will completely have the audit filed, done, and ready to report on within 5 months after fiscal year end, if I'm interpreting this correctly.
So that was my question, Chair. We're changing the date in our law
to coincide with kind of how the federal government has outlined their timeline and the natural timeline of how audits get completed by all tribes.
So it's our law that's causing the bottleneck or what have you?
Yeah, I think if I read...
Look, I'm not completely sold on this yet. I don't know really how I'm going to vote on this. And so that's why I'm asking the questions.
Correct.
And so you're saying both audits are due in June. And when you say report, that report, you mean the audit is complete and then you're reporting that information to Congress, and you're saying that that's, of course, being done in March.
Yes, if I read from the code itself, it says the treasurer shall annually oversee preparation and publication of financial information pertinent to the nation in the form of an executive summary report of the annual audited financial reports of the Osage Nation to be made available to all enrolled members of the Osage Nation no later than March 1st of each year for the previous fiscal year. So that's, when I read that, that's saying that this March 1st, according to this code, I'm expected to deliver an audit summary that we're just starting the audit. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yes, Chair, that makes sense to me, but so you're saying, so in the law that you're reading in our code, does it describe which type of audit?
No.
Government-wide or single?
It says annual audited financial reports, the Osage Nation, and then it would read... to be made available to all enrolled members of the Osage Nation no later than July 15th of each year for the previous fiscal year.
So, you know, Chair, if I may, you're aware that there's a lot of discussion around our audits being submitted late or not being done in a timely manner because of the, you know, I guess communication between Treasury and the audit firm, and then they have to do their job to prepare the audit, correct?
Or in what regards were the audits late?
Well, I think may have even been before that you got here, right in the beginning of when you got here, we had to ask for extensions of our audits.
Correct. On the 2020 audit, that is correct. And we did ask for an extension, but the federal government did come out and allow an extension for all tribes till December 31st. So kind of in that nature, the federal government, due to the time period of related with what transpired during COVID, they came out and pushed that audit date to December 31st. So in essence, the federal government changed their date. So you're still submitted in time. Now, they didn't change their date until, I think, I wasn't here, but I think we had requested the extension prior to that change by the federal government coming down. So those were turned in, and then the audits that were due for fiscal year 21, that audit was prepared and submitted by the June 30th date. So that audit was submitted on time. Now, that's valid statements that you've made between the government audit is the one that really has a deadline. Now, the tribe-wide audit, there is not really a deadline for it that I've found, and except for maybe March 1st. And I'm saying that that's, if you do intend to bring in a CPA, they're very aware of these type of what's in the code. Because So it's dressing up the code to kind of coincide with how normal kind of tribal audits operate.
So I might be repeating or overlapping here. So on the single-wide audit, we're not talking about it. We're talking about the government-wide audit?
I would just say tribe-wide.
Okay.
And then government is typically federal and tribal.
Okay.
Governmental funds. Your tribe-wide is when you bring in your enterprise funds, fitness center, WELA, tax.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those components. And then you also bring in the components from gaming, home health, LLC.
And that's the audit we're talking about.
That's tribe-wide.
Okay. That's the one we're talking about, setting it up for June 30th.
Our timeline this year is to complete the tribe-wide audit, yes, by June 30th. Now, whether you want to define in this code the tribe-wide audit, I think that would need to be defined. Because annual audit, to me, that is the tribe-wide audit. But terminology-wise, who would know, you know, kind of leaves it open.
Okay. Well, then I'm still confused. I'm trying to figure out which one we're talking about. There's two audits.
To me, it's the tribe-wide audit. The tribe-wide audit, the way I would interpret this, is tribe-wide audit to me. I'm not going to say that anyone would interpret it the same as I.
Okay.
But with it saying annual audit, to me, I read that as tribe-wide audit. But that's me.
Okay. I'll go to Congresswoman Lemon.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. So in reading through this legislation and then listening to what you've brought to us, Mr. McIntosh, I want to focus on some of this executive summary report, okay?
Right.
So audit, we all use the word audit in different ways, tribe-wide, government, federal. So somebody might think government, are you meaning U.S. government audit? Are you meaning federal dollars that is given to us or we've applied for? Pardon me. Yeah. And then we look at tribe-wide. So I think that definitely maybe we need some more clarification and maybe get on the same page on that particular piece of it. But this also includes an executive summary report of the annual audit, audited financial reports. So to me, that just covers all, like you're saying, all financial reports. That's what that says to me.
Yeah, that's
all financial reports. It doesn't give a definition to say just federal dollars or just appropriated dollars or just enterprise dollars. It just means to me, it means all the dollars that
tribal.
Have gone through our government, through tribal our
audit.
Tribal government. Yes.
That's
so the executive summary report, so what I find interesting in this is that we have set a date of March 1st in the past, and I'd like to try to understand where that came from. You know, who like, I'm going to have to do my research on that particular date personally, and I would like some time to do that or ask, some, you know, for some assistance, because why on earth would we put a barrier in front of ourselves that is unobtainable based on the based on information that you keep referring to a CPA, and I know that that's gonna be another discussion about the Treasury requiring a CPA. That legislation was withdrawn. But what I'm trying to help work through in my mind is, who came up with March 1st, and where and why did we choose that? We don't know, right? That just seems like one of those things where you paint yourself into the corner.
Yeah,
if you're self just starting your audit because you haven't even, you're just finishing closing up the books from the prior year at the end of March sometimes. Because that's the end of the first quarter. We do many things and I've been part of financial audits. Some people think that, you know, oh, it should just, you know, there's variables that occur. And a lot of times, just like with our health benefit card, we have until the end of March, which is the first quarter of the following fiscal year, to submit receipts based on giving us time as a constituent to say, hey, I'm giving you this receipt from December 1st that happened in 2022 and trying to get it utilized and it paid for by RT Consulting, but it might be February 1st of 2023 that we submitted it and we have that window. So I'm just trying to understand why we would make that. And I'm not saying for or against at this point in time. I'm trying to rationalize why March 1st. And if you don't have anything audited or you're not there yet, I would think that your executive summary report would say that we're in the middle of an audit on March 1st. And this is where we are in the audit, or we have started to submit this information and our deadline to the U.S. government and our own deadline is July 15th.
I would agree with that, except for it says that audited financial statements, not the process of where you're at in audit. It's saying that the financials have already been audited. So that's the one area I would, yeah.
Yeah, and so that kind of can handcuff us. And so they haven't officially been audited with the final stamp. And so I'm just trying to work through the legislation. Like I said, I'm not saying I'm for or against. I'm trying to understand the rationale.
Looking at the threshold of improving, increasing to 250,000, my impression or my guess would be that this was established at some time period when you were not as big of a organization or as big of a tribe as you are now. Just as the statements were made, I remember when we were this or only had that. Well, that was probably a pretty achievable date at that time. But just as the audit, we looked at the audit summary provided this past summer and pointed out you're from 2019, 20, and 21, you could see the growth of this nation. This nation is growing. The dollars flowing through the nation are growing. The programs that we have over 250 balance sheets and income statements is how many balance sheets and income statements we review. Like, our CFA is 280 lines. Like, when we complete our CFA for the audit and we validate all 200 federal programs against the payment systems, against to make sure our records are right, that's what we're audited against. That's the time period that it takes. You got till December 31st. The federal government allows that for liquidation of your 930 balances. And within that time frame, they're saying, all right, after that date, you have 6 months to get it turned in. That's when they're basically giving you 6 months outside of that liquidation period. Now, GASB, speaking in GASB terms, government audit encompasses government federal dollars you're receiving, because GASB's saying you're the federal government, you're receiving that from the federal government, and those are for you to operate with. That's government dollars. Now, you have your own general fund money that's your own government dollars. But that's why it's called the government audit, because it's dealing with all governmental type funds in a sense. And then when you get to tribe wide, you bring in your components, which is gaming, LLC, home health. You obtain their audits from them, and then you make sure that all that ties in with our audited numbers. So the transfer out from gaming has a tie in with our transfer in from gaming. We make sure the ins and outs of the components match us. That's part of the tribe-wide audit. That's the piece that you move into after the government. And then you bring in the enterprise funds too within that portion of the tribe-wide. Enterprise funds for GASB, the way the audits are prepared, enterprise funds, you're assuming risk. It's kind of like a business. You got program income, or you're going to make your program income. There's more risk. GASB is all set up to where governments, you don't assume risk. Governments are not to operate on risk. Governments are to be established and to maintain moving forward in the future. That's why that governments operate on low risk. That's the difference between a government and a business. Business is all about assuming risk. So government funds, you control. It's against the law to overappropriate your, against your revenues. It all ties into that basic theory. But this would be, this request is really to align the code to with the natural way that the government audits are prepared and just the natural timeline. It's not saying that we're not going to provide the information to the members of the Osage Nation. I'm going to provide it, but I would ask that the timeline go along with what the federal government gives you time in preparing those numbers, is what the ask is, I guess.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Frazier.
I did review earlier when the deadline was set, and it was set in 2006. I also looked at the audit submission dates to Congress in the communication log, and I found every year except for 2010, and it looks like the deadline of March 1st has never been met before. I also checked some other tribes' submission dates for the single audits, and the ones that do submit by that March 1st deadline generally have the, I mean, I didn't, I checked about 11 different tribes, and they, the ones that submitted by that time had about a fifth of the federal awards that we did. I think there was one that had an equivalent amount up in Alaska that met that deadline. So they were pretty on top of it, but most of them had about a fifth of the funds that we did.
And
then when I was looking just now to try to find the bill from 06 that set the deadline, I did see the 150,000 threshold was also set in 2006.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Frazier. Congresswoman Rebard.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So it sounds like, or sounds as though, you know, from that we already wait 6 months, but now you're requesting that we wait 9 months for audited financials and you know, with regards to actuals and information, you know, most of the information we receive right now, just today on these ARPA, I'm sure they're in a draft form or they're not. Of course, they're not. They're unaudited, of course, right now. So it gives me just a, I feel like I understand the difference between the single audit and the government-wide proprietary funds and the components found within, but, you know, we, my concern about this is the way we operate, and you got to think of our sessions, too, being held in September and then in April for HUNCA, and the timing of that and the information we need. But it's about the retained revenue that concerns me, that we would have to wait longer to identify a solid retained revenue number, waiting on the, we have to wait, because in law, we wait for you to send the memo telling us how much we have based off of the government wide.
Can I respond?
Is that correct, or is it the single?
The retained revenue, essentially, if I was to pull it back up and read it, I believe the retained revenue says that once the audit's completed, then the treasurer is to identify the retained revenue. So that date's predicated on when the audit's completed, in the time frame after that. So I'm this, and I believe it's 2 weeks. Read a lot of information, I believe it's 2 weeks. This would almost align that date that you get retained revenue along with this report. I'm saying that the audit should be done by June 30th, and within 2 weeks, if you're on top of your audit, you should be able to, you and the auditors, provide that summary report of the financial statements if they're issued by June 30th. And then you would get retained revenue in this report at the same time, and everything aligns appropriately.
Congresswoman Rebard.
Yes, thank you. So let's talk about that reporting and that deadline of retained revenue, because, you know, the audit, of course, I like to see that we've passed an audit. That's most important.
but also it, it provides that number for retained revenue. And since I've been here, we haven't received that memo in a timely manner, or we have received it and it says, well, this is the number right now. It's a, it's not a solid number. And that, that's, you know, not to you, but in the past. So we're always asking, what's the number? What's that balance? And I'm afraid that if we extend this, it even, I'm just, you're really going to have to sell me as to how this is going to relate to the dates that we already have in law. And I think you make a good point. You're asking for an extension of this particular date, but we have other dates as well that we have to follow. I appreciate the budget analyst, you know, providing some information on what other tribes do, just as a guideline, or, you know, good, just good data. But I feel like that extension from 6 months to 9 months to get actuals is just kind of, and our sessions and things of that nature. So, I mean, in plain terms, are you saying that you keep reverting back to the CPA, that would bother a CPA, a certified person, but is, how's it affect you? You're the one that's been doing this. What were your barriers? And if you could be specific, what were your bottlenecks that you're the one doing it?
Right.
And so I want to hear that, because I really don't know which way to, how to vote on this right now. Thus far, I'm hearing all the background of it, but I want to know specifically, you know, why are you coming to say that this is something that needs to be done? Apparently, you've experienced something.
It's just an area of the code that, you know, that can be pointed out that you didn't achieve that date, and it's, well, it's unachievable. You know, I think history, as Mr. Frazier explained, it's never been achieved. There's a reason for that, because it doesn't coincide with the normal timelines of an audit on a government timeline. Now, I think you made a good point of looking at other tribes too, but and I can clarify a little bit more in my statement or expand. You're allowed 9 months to turn in your single audit, government audit. Is kind of the deadline. So if a tribe sets its fiscal year end date as January, their audit's due by September 30th. If a tribe sets its fiscal year end date as June 30th, their audits are due by March. That's, you could meet those deadlines. So if someone looked at when another tribe potentially was looking at getting that report and it was March 1st, the question would be, well, did you see what their fiscal year end date is? Because that may have determine the March 1st date that they're utilizing, you know, prior to the other. But with the Osage Nation, the fiscal year end date is 9/30, September 30th. So essentially 9 months from then is what the federal government allows you, essentially, to, one, liquidate all the federal programs in that first, from October to December. And then typically that's when you finalize your expenditures, you go in and you accrue your revenues on top of it, you make sure it's accurate, and then you're allowed to draw down your funds during that period. And once all that transaction activity ends, that's when you go into audit prep and say, all right, here's the final numbers, here's where they landed, now let's start. I've always evaluated numbers, but that's when I'm ready to go in and say, okay, they've landed. Now I'm gonna go see where they landed and see if they look like they landed in the right spots. You know, you build systems. This ARPA project alone, we spent $59 million so far, is what we show in total expenditures. We expend millions of dollars. You have to build processes that can, where things flow, but you have to have internal controls and reviews in certain places, and that's what we're working on building right now. But getting back to this, it's essentially, it's aligning it with how the federal government allows you with the federal dollars you're receiving, with when they're requiring the information to be turned in, and just saying the normal course of the way the audit is being completed, it should always be completed by June 30th, in my mind. And it should be reported to Congress by July 15th. And to me, that should be an achievable date. But by going back and saying, okay, you liquidate in the first October to December, and then you got January and February. One, you got to start your audit in January, because we're turning in our final trial balance on our timeline this year is March 31st. The expectation for the governmental side, the expectation is we can issue hopefully by Memorial Weekend. So that's a 2-month window of audit where we get questions like every day, all day long, on top of the normal day to day.
Chair, that was, if I may, that's another thing with, since I've been on Congress, if you guys remember, like in September when we're trying to get ready for CEJO, Treasury's always in this crunch of getting ready for the audit, or that's what they would say. you remember, it's just like, well, we're getting ready for the audit. I can't come down. You know, at that time it was the controller. They're working on the audit and things of that nature. I guess I just have one more question, and then I think I'll be good. So just flip it just a little bit. What are the benefits of having the date the way it is right now? Are there any benefit to that?
I think the benefit would be that the Treasury office or the treasurer would not be missing that date every year. And to me, it's just the natural course of the way my years of experience in dealing with audits, being over audits in all organizations, that's typically how it flows. Is in healthcare, it really aligns with that timeline of when you got to have your audit done and your Medicare cost report compiled, and it all comes together and it's all kind of aligned in those areas. But when you get in the tribal side, you align it according to me, the federal government. I think right now we receive far more federal dollars than we have in governmental dollars on an annual operating basis with ARPA money and all these funds we're receiving. So the federal dollars are really driving that audit of government programs.
Okay. Yes, Mr. Frazier.
On the benefits, of course, like Congressman Big Horse, Congressman Rivard mentioned, you would have access to retained revenue faster. And then I also reached out to Scott Manzer, who's the legislative branch representative on the Investment Oversight Committee. The average deposit into the retained revenue fund from fiscal years 2015 through fiscal year 2018 was about $2 million. So if, assuming that Treasury began meeting the deadline on completing the audit and getting the deposit in on time, you would be getting about $25,000 to $30,000 extra in investment revenue in those few months. And that would be the other benefit.
Thank you. Okay, and unless the committee is ready to take an action right now, I'm going to break us for lunch and we'll come back and continue the discussion. Okay, we're going to recess for lunch and we'll come back at 1:45.
Chair.
That'll give us an hour and a half because I know some of us need to look at some financials. We've gotten some new information and stuff. Yes, who's that?
Is child development done for today or do we need to stay back?
I think, let's see. Do we have anything for tribal development in 2317? Jordan, can you think of any?
No, those are just grants, I believe.
I don't think so,
everything
Chair.
Else are grants so. Or those tribal budgets. I don't think they had anything in the tribal
okay.
budgets.
We don't think so. I guess we just have to give you a call if we hit something.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay, we're recessed.
I just